Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Leah Tarachansky. She is an Israeli-Canadian journalist and filmmaker. She has been reporting on Israel and Palestine for the Real News Network, but has now produced a terrific full-length film by the name of On the Side of the Road. You can check it out at the website of narrativeproductions.com, and that is spelled N-A-R-E-T-I-V. N-A-R-E-T-I-V productions.com. Leah Tarachansky, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Yeah, it's wonderful, and it was wonderful to finally get a chance to see your film, On the Side of the Road, which is absolutely tremendous. Why don't you just tell us where you got the idea, how this came about?
Sure. I was actually working in America, in Washington, D.C., in 2008. I was covering, as a journalist for The Real News, the first election of Barack Obama. I was already, you know, very involved on things back home in Israel, and I was already very critical as an Israeli of everything going on. But through a series of books and some clips people sent me, I discovered 1948, and really discovered what happened there, especially through the work of Israeli historians such as Ilan Papen, Benny Morris, and Avi Shlaim, the new historians. And for me, because I moved to Israel when I was six from the former Soviet Union, my grandparents didn't live in Israel in 1948 and didn't fight in the war that created the country, that created Israel, and the modern conflict by creating a huge population of Palestinian refugees. In that war, two-thirds of the Palestinians that lived for centuries in the region became refugees, forced out of their homes for the creation of Israel. And for me, understanding this for the first time finally made it clear why the Palestinians are fighting us. And it also really kind of was this aha moment for me when I finally understood that much of what I learned in school was either a half-truth or a total lie. And so I decided to make a film. You know, I at first approached it as a journalist, wanting to make a journalistic film. But over the years of making it, it evolved into a very personal movie about the people who did the expulsions and the massacres of the war, and how they struggle through their own denial of what they did, what they saw, and the significance of it. And it was through their stories that you really understand the profundity of the tragedy that was bestowed the Palestinian people as a result of the Nazi Holocaust of the Jews and of the Jewish nationalist movement of Zionism in Palestine. So that's roughly what the film is about. It also includes my personal story as someone who grew up in a settlement in the middle of the West Bank, and over the course of many years evolved out of that perspective. And now as a journalist, as a correspondent, you know, I work in and out of Palestine and the West Bank all the time, in Gaza, with Gazans, not in Gaza. And I get to see firsthand that this project of dispossession and really national destruction continues. It's not something that happened in 1948. It's something that really started in 1948. And it continues today, you know, just now, under the guise of trying to subdue the popular uprisings that we're seeing all over Israel and the West Bank in the last few weeks, Israel has deported a ton of activists out of Palestine, out of Israel and Palestine. So this process of dispossession continues to today. Same thing continues with the Bedouins in the Negev and with the Palestinians inside of Israel. So the same idea persists today. So the film is very urgent today, not just to understand where the conflict comes from, but also, unfortunately, where it seems to be heading.
It's a remarkable thing to my mind as an American who's never been to Israel that something so massive, so major as a military force taking over a country that was inhabited with permanent towns and cities and evicting two-thirds of the people could just a couple generations later to the grandchildren of the people who did it not exist. So and it's not just people like you who say that your family when you were young moved to Israel, so your grandparents weren't there. But we had a guest on this program who I know you know, named Miko Peled, whose grandparents were very much involved in doing this, and whose father was a war hero and so forth. And he grew up believing that Israel had been founded in a uninhabited territory, and he had to discover what happened in 1948. How is it possible that this secret has to be revealed after such a short span of time?
Wow, that's a fantastic question. And in fact, that to me is the most important question. And, Israel is not unique in that way. What you're describing is how does the process of collective denial come into fore? And it's a concept that was really identified, named, and sort of defined by the South African historian and sociologist Stanley Cohen. And Stanley Cohen, in his phenomenal book, States of Denial, Knowing About Atrocities and Suffering, really sort of identifies what he has studied over his life about how societies come to know, not know, and deny much of their own histories and much of their own reality. And what is it that makes some people look at the same object and yet not see, or supposedly not see, what it is that they're looking for? What does this knowledge of this same object, this, for example, following the expulsions, about 500 Palestinian villages were demolished in the first years of Israel and erased off the map. So everywhere you drive in Israel today, you are either on the lands of or near the lands of a destroyed Palestinian village or an expelled Palestinian neighborhood. And most of us are completely ignorant to that history. And, of course, you have the same reality here in America. Right now I'm in Washington, D.C. I have 5 screenings of the film in the coming week and a half. I have no idea who are the people who lived in Washington before the European colonialists came. I don't know their names. I don't know if any of them survived. I don't know where they are. The difference between you and us is that for us, this happened within living memory. Our grandparents did that. And for you, it was 200 years ago. It's the same processes that repeat themselves over and over and over again throughout the world. And Stanley Cohen asks this very important question. He wonders not only why is it that two different people look at the same thing and see a totally two different things, but what does the knowledge, do to us, and what do we do to this knowledge? And these are profoundly important questions. So he identifies 3 different kinds of collective denial. The first is the most obvious one of not knowing. You know, you have the resources to know, you have the ability to know, but you don't know, more or less, what was done. And I think that this is where America is in. I think most Americans, not just white Americans, but most Americans don't know the history of this place, the people's history of this place. And then there's the second kind, which is where we are in Israel, which is that you know and you don't know. Or more importantly, you know just enough to know what questions you cannot ask. And this is really the success of propaganda and of the Zionist movement by and large, is that by the time you finish high school and you enter the Israeli army, as I'm sure you know, everyone in Israel, men and women, everybody has to serve in the army. By the time you enter the army, you're 18 years old, you already know what questions you cannot ask. And it's not that it is a dictatorship where if you ask these questions, you'll be repressed. No, you are living in an active conflict. You don't want to ask these questions, because to ask these questions, such as who are the people who live there, here, where are they now, who are the people who are still living here, what do they want, why are we segregated, why are the Palestinians fighting us, why is it that all of us live like this, and all of them live like that. Why is there a military occupation in the West Bank? Why are we bombing Gaza all the time? You know, you have some kind of official answer, but it's kind of a partial answer. And if you really, really think about it, it doesn't really make sense. And this is why you don't ask these questions. So the second kind of collective denial is that knowing what questions not to ask, knowing and not knowing. And the third kind, which is, I think, where we are moving now in Israel, because, I guess because of the new historians, but also because of the internet, you know, so much is now available in terms of information that it's almost impossible that so much of my generation has no idea about the reality of the Palestinians today. They don't know what's on the other side of that wall. So the third kind of denial is that you know, or at least you have the ability to know, but you deny the moral significance of what you know. So today, by and large in Israel, most people know that something awful happened in 1948. Maybe they don't know the details. Maybe they don't know the extent that two-thirds of the Palestinians were expelled. But they deny the moral significance of it. What does it mean to the Palestinian people that we have destroyed their homeland with our national aspiration as a result of European anti-Semitism? What does it mean that we have gathered in the Jews from all around the world, dispersed over thousands of years and oppressed much of the world, finally found a national homeland, but by doing that, created a diaspora, created a displacement, created a tragedy for another people who are today displaced all around the world because of that? What does it mean? And what is our responsibility? This is where we really are today. These are the questions that my film raises. And these are profoundly important questions, especially today as we see the rise, unprecedented rise of extreme right-wing movements in Israel, nationalist movements, also neo-fascist movement, and even neo-Nazi movements in Israel. The conflict is getting worse. The frequency of wars is getting higher, and the destruction of these wars is getting worse. So I think it's getting more and more important, because unless you deal with the past, you don't understand your present. And if you don't understand your present, you don't know how to move into the future.
I think that's an excellent analysis of how things are kept unknown. That, of course, applies to many things in the past for people in the United States, including Israel's past, which people in the United States are as oblivious to as are any Israelis. While the United States provides billions of dollars of free weaponry to the Israeli government to continue what it's doing, I think that what's remarkable about this film, and we are speaking with Lia Tarachansky, whose film is called On the Side of the Road, what's remarkable about this film is that you have living individuals who participated in massacres and evictions of the people of Palestine talking about what they did and exhibiting how they try to deny it to themselves, but ultimately admitting not only what they did, but the seriousness of what they did. How did you track these people down and get them on film, first of all, and how did that go? And how are people reacting to the film at the screenings you're going to?
So as a journalist, you know, especially covering Israel-Palestine, I've come to understand that by working for independent press, independent media, I had the freedom to cover stories that were underreported, grossly underreported in your press. The American mainstream media doesn't, you know, an atrocious job reporting on the Middle East, especially on Israel-Palestine. So what I focused on is the stories that the mainstream media doesn't cover, but not so much this exclusive, secret exposure, you know, get the guy who to say the thing, da-da-da-da-da. No, I covered the stuff that's hidden in plain sight. This is the stuff that I think is the most important to cover, and the thing that there is no excuse why the mainstream media is ignoring it, other than to serve interests, corporate interests and global interests and American interests. And by covering this, the same thing applied to the film, is that it's not that I had to go digging for veterans. The veterans of this war are alive and they're living everywhere. everybody's grandparents and grandmothers fought in that war. Everybody was involved in it in one way or another. And so I just started asking all my friends if their grandparents and grandmothers, you know, grandfathers, grandmothers fought in the war, and if they would speak to me. And I started collecting interviews. And then someone found out that I'm collecting these interviews, and he contacted me, and he told me, you know, I'm a veteran, and I want to speak. And that's how I found Amnon, the male character in my film. And Tikva, the female, she fought in 1948, and she wrote a brilliant essay about it called A Daughter of the 48th Generation. And I read this essay, and I saw a clip of hers on YouTube, and I tracked her down, and I talked to her, and ended up interviewing her as well.
You also include in the film other points of view, survivors of 1948, and descendants. You speak with a young man in a permanent, I guess, refugee camp, who says that his home is somewhere he's never been, and that his children, his grandchildren will feel the same way, that this place that they've never been is their home because they were removed from it.
Or their grandparents were removed from it.
Exactly. Their grandparents were removed from it. It's an incredible perspective. How are people reacting? What sort of response are you getting showing the film to audiences?
Yeah, that's a very important question. And I want to say that what I wanted to do with this film is I didn't want to make a film that sits on the left or that sits on the right. You know, the tragedy of the Holocaust had its implications not just on what happened in Palestine, because, as you know, the Zionist movement was a minuscule movement amongst the Jews around the world before the Holocaust, and the Holocaust is really what created Zionism as we know it today, by forcing hundreds of thousands of Jews to Palestine, when even after the Holocaust, the United States, Canada, most of the Western world didn't want to take them. I wanted to let people speak for themselves, and I wanted to come as close to the truth as possible, not on the historical level in terms of having historians, but on the real feeling of the place. And, you know, I interviewed some leaders of the Zionist movement in the West Bank, you know, settler movements, and I let them say their piece. And I speak to, you know, religious people, and I speak to Palestinian refugees, and I speak to Israeli veterans. And the film also includes my perspective. So I wanted to let everyone say their piece. And so that way you get a collage of the picture, like, or let's say not a collage, but little bits of the bigger picture. And I think that this has a lot to do with how the film is perceived. Both, you know, I've done most of the screenings of the film I did were in Israel. I did a couple in the West Bank and in Europe. And now I am just finishing a huge tour of the United States with 5 screenings in Washington, D.C. But the Israeli screenings, the American screenings, which have been the hardest, I would say that the response has been extremely varied. And I think I've made a lot of people question a lot of what they thought, regardless of where they saw it, sit on the spectrum of opinions. Because, of course, the reality is so much more complex than you could ever imagine, than you can ever conceive of, if you don't live it. And I wanted to come close to representing that complexity. But also it's very simple, and I think we all know in our hearts what is just and what is unjust. And to expel hundreds of thousands of people and never allow them to even visit the place where they are expelled from, and now their descendants number millions of people, to never let them return, never even let them visit, is, I think, everyone knows in their heart that that's extremely unjust, and no amount of justification will ever make that just. And the Palestinians, most of whom, you know, live next door to, within 100 kilometers of where they were expelled from, you know, they live in refugee camps throughout their world. They will never stop fighting for the right to return. Nor should they, and we're going to have to deal with that sooner or later. And that's how people respond, you know. They are very, I would have to say that the film has a very strong impact on people, whether it's positive or negative or something in the middle, but people seem to have a very strong response to it because it resonates with a lot of people. And I think that what I wanted to do is I wanted to break through this tired, awful discourse of us versus them, as if the conflict is some kind of sports match where you have to be pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli, and you have to take your position and dig your line in the sand and really, you know, fight for one people or the other. You know, and this is part of the tragedy, is that I think that most people in Israel-Palestine, regardless of who they are, you know, because we are living in a very violent, active conflict, I think that for me, at least, by the time I finished high school, I knew in the depth of my heart, and no one told me we should expel the rest of the Palestinians, but I knew in the depth of my heart that if they just weren't here, everything will be okay. If they just weren't here, we wouldn't have a conflict. They are the reason for the conflict. They are the ones who are fighting us. They are the ones who are blowing up buses, and they are the ones who are anti-Semites. And when I realized that much of that is not true, and of course realized that no one is going to magically evaporate into, you know, we are going to continue living together, I hope, for centuries to come, hopefully not in conflict. And I started to look at the origins of that conflict. I started to see how simple it is for us to live together as we once did before mass dispossession movements of either Jews or Palestinians. We have lived together for centuries, and we will live together as soon as the United States and other global powers stop getting involved in the conflict and stop meddling in it.
It's interesting, the young Palestinian man in the film speaking about what he wants says nothing about eliminating Jews or revenge, but looks back to what he sees as a pre-1948 peaceful coexistence, which to some extent certainly existed between Jews and Muslims in that region. But you are in particular, and we have just a few minutes left, but if you could talk about how you feel about the place where you grew up in Israel, as someone who has come to some extent to see the point of view of those other people who are lied about and not talked about among those growing up there.
Yeah. You know, it's... I think that it's to live in Israel as someone who is fundamentally opposed to inequality between the Jews and the non-Jews. You know, and Israel is a Jewish state where 30 different laws distinguish between Jewish and non-Jewish citizens, where there is systematic, institutional, legal, geographic discrimination against Palestinians, be they citizens, refugees, or subjects of our military in the West Bank and Gaza. To live opposed to that in the country that makes that possible is to live in constant conflict. But I see that as a conflict that I'm happy to be a part of, a contradiction I'm happy to live with, because I love it. I love living there. I love this place. I love my people, and I love living in a mixed place like Yaffa, where I get to live alongside with Palestinian neighbors, you know, be they Muslim or Christian, Cherkessi neighbors, you know, you name it, people from all around the world. I don't believe in ethnic exclusivity for any group, let alone for our group. I don't think that struggling for ethnic exclusivity in what was traditionally the crossroads of human migration, to say that now, as opposed to the thousands of years before us, no one can come here anymore, only us, only the Jews, and this is a state benefiting only the Jews. All of the resources will go to the benefit of the Jews and only the Jews. That is, to me, unjust, fundamentally unjust, and I would rather live in a just society than a Jewish society. And I think that this is a perspective that many people share in Israel-Palestine. And I hope that someday we will live together there in equality.
I would hope so. It seems to be the only possible solution. I was also struck by some of the images in the film. You found an image on Google Earth of the outline of a village that's otherwise been erased, but you can still see from the trees and the rocks remaining where it was. Discoveries or demonstrations to people in the film of the names and the outlines and remaining buildings and rubble of villages that have been lost. Is there growing awareness in Israel? I would think many people would be fascinated to know what used to be just nearby where they're living. Is that sort of awareness spreading of the villages that were erased?
Definitely. And I think that this is what gives me hope. I am certain that human curiosity will and does overpower the instinct for insular and exceptionalism. I'm certain that curiosity will overpower exceptionalism, and it does. And you see that as soon as newspapers started and journals and books started coming out about remapping these places, finding out who lived there, where are they now, how many are they now, and there's all kinds of projects popping up of municipal planners and architects and all kinds of people who are trying to imagine a practical return, something that will not, again, displace people, but will, in fact, create a practical way for us to live together. People like that, they have really sparked the imagination of so many people around the world in Israel and Palestine, who are starting to say, what can we do to re-envision, restructure, reconstruct in a way that is not exclusive for one group or another, but is actually equal. And there's a couple of projects. There's the Zohorot organization, which is an Israeli organization that has mapped out all the villages. They even created an iPhone app called iNakba, INAKBA, that you can download on your iPhone or your Android device, and you can see the hundreds of villages that were destroyed. There's also a project by the Italian architect Alessandro Preti called Decolonizing Palestine, where they take places where there were Palestinian villages that are today empty hilltops, empty fields all over the country, and they think of practical forms of return for the people who are from these places. A million and one different projects are coming up that many of them I've never even heard of, I'm sure, also in Europe. So, I'm very hopeful that the curiosity, human curiosity, will overpower the instinct for exclusivity.
Wonderful news. The film is called On the Side of the Road. The filmmaker is Leah Tarachansky, and you can check it out and find a screening in the Washington, D.C. area and elsewhere at narrativeproductions.com, narrativeproductions.com. Leah, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.